And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Pulling pins on truth grenades in here. All right, we're going to number two on the Triple Dipper called Keeping the Lights On. And this is an economic discussion, all right? And I'll be honest with you, the economy has ranked consistently as either number one or two across the board for the entire presidential election cycle. And it should. People often say that, you know, you remember, what's his name, the mouth of the South, James Carville. He said so famously back during the Clinton era, it's the economy, stupid. What he's trying to say is, if people can't buy bacon, they vote accordingly. Well, there's also the fact that there's every reason to believe that Trump is going to change the economy. Now, Phil, can one person really make that big a difference? Friggin' right they can, if they have the power, the will, and the authority to do it. He did it before. Now, this time, there are several factors in play that are believed to be coming in that are bringing a great deal of optimism that has not been there for quite some time. For the last 4 years, we have been in a mode in which government was willing to regulate things into non-existence regardless of what it did to our economy. Case in point is the auto industry. The auto industry got ransacked by the Biden administration. Ransacked. And then there's the fact that we spent billions and billions of dollars plussing up a green energy sector that could not survive on its own. Now, again, I don't care if somebody wants windmills. I don't care if somebody wants solar. Just understand, don't try to push that on us like it's the only thing that works, because it doesn't. Well, it's just better for the environment than a coal-fired plant. Do you know what it takes to build and maintain one wind turbine? Do you know how much petroleum product it takes to build one? Do you? And then maintain it, and then lubricate it, and then, you know, get over there in a, combustion-engined helicopter to service it, or to climb up in it and do things to it that are necessary to keep it going in cold weather when a coal-fired plant would not have shut down. All that to say, the green energy sector can't survive without the other aspects of energy generation. Now, energy is also, listen, I'll be honest with you, it's the economy. So much of what we do and spend and why we have to spend is tied to the energy sector. I'm going to get to that in a minute. Let me tell you this, though. I came across a piece on Fox Business, Dateline today, that is one of the most upbeat things I've seen, and it doesn't feel glossy. It's not one of those like trying to, blow smoke, hey, it's all going to be good. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. It doesn't feel that way. This one has the air of authenticity attached to it. It's the most heartening thing I've read about the pending economy in quite a while. Fox Business, Dateline today, starts off by saying, as President-elect Donald Trump prepares to retake the White House in January, the National Association of Business Economics is more optimistic on the outlook for the U.S. economy. So the NABA is not just a panel of so-called, egghead experts, academics. It's not. These are industry participants. These are 38 professional forecasters who work inside of major companies who know what their company is experiencing. So the president of the NABE, the National Association of Business Economics, is currently the global chief economist at Ford Motor Company. Then you've got members from places like Wells Fargo and FedEx and others. They see things. They know what they're experiencing. They know why it will benefit them. They can forecast accordingly. Their forecasts are economic growth in the remainder of 24 and in 25, higher than previous projections. It says Ford is part of the 38 professional forecasters. They are seeing a 2.7% potential jump from September expectations. For 2025, they're looking at growth estimates of 2% from the initial 1.8, meaning it's going up from their original expectations. Here's the factors they claim. Moderating inflation, finally. More balanced risks. What does that mean? Less regulatory overburden. And then a Federal Reserve that's in easing mode. In other words, the Federal Reserve is finally cutting the rates. Where are the rates going to go? Why do the rates really matter? Well, the rates matter because people don't know whether to borrow money to buy a house, start a business, do the things necessary to put capital infusions into what they do. Policymakers, it says, expect interest rates to end the year around 4.4%. My gosh, that's better. Falling to 3.4% in 2025. My gosh, that's better. As for GDP, they expect 2% growth in GDP for next year. They also expect the Trump Tax Cuts and Jobs Act to be extended. It's due to expire in 2025, but 78% of the members of the panel expect an extension. None of them expect an expiration. I think this is an amazingly good forecast. Now, there's some things, though, that play in, like how will Trump overcome the damage that was done to our energy sector? Because that's a huge deal. Right now, we're looking at places in our nation, in this country, in the most first world of first world countries, that are looking at the potential for rolling blackouts. That is inexcusable. The only way that happens is if we overcommit ourselves to under or incapable systems. Grid sustainability is a huge deal, and you have to reach what's called baseline load. Baseline load is the minimum amount it takes to keep a part of the grid active and engaged, especially when you get into peak. Look, I got all kinds of stuff on this, and then we'll have a conversation with the head of our PSC in Alabama coming up at the top of the hour. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. I'm looking out the window. I can prove it. I mean, y'all, Alabama. This show goes like way down south of Birmingham and up north of Huntsville and Tuscaloosa, back to Gadsden, parts of Georgia, Tennessee, and even Mississippi, all thrown in just for good measure. So, hey, by the way, if you're interested, you can stream the show live no matter where you are. We have great station affiliates that we're on, covering, you know, big chunks of the North Alabama area. But you can always follow us online. And right now we are streaming. You can go to our Twitter feed, and we'd love it if you would. Go to our Twitter feed for @rightside_media, or you can go to my personal one, @sen, that's S-E-N, @sen Phil Williams, or you can go to our website, rightsidemedia.org, and click on the on-air portion and watch it live. You're also on YouTube, also on Rumble, also on Twitch. Have I forgotten one? Have I got it all?
You got all of them. They're there.
Dude. All right. Yeah, we're on all the places. And by the way, if you do go to YouTube or one of the others like Rumble, we'd appreciate it if you click subscribe, because that actually helps us as a business, because Right Side Radio is only one part of what we do. Right Side Media is the company. And we do written stuff, we do podcasts, we do the radio show, we got it all. So we would love to have y'all help us grow. Anyway, check it out. Okay, I'm in number two of the Triple Dipper, keeping the lights on. You know, it gets hard when you got Democrats in charge, right? So California, you just want to look at it and go, bless their hearts. But California right now is staring at a new study by University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business. So this is Dateline last Wednesday. I believe this is a state senator from California who put this out, that Gavin Newsom has new gas regulations that could force Californians to pay up to 90 cents more per gallon of regular fuel in 2025. 90 cents more per gallon. What? Like, they don't already have the most expensive gas in the nation, right? It says a staggering increase includes the recent 65-cent gas price hike, mandates to withhold gasoline supplies from the market, and refinery closures caused by overregulation. So they're shutting down refineries. They're limiting availability to the market for reasons that are just purely to drive people towards renewables. By the way, they're not renewable. They're not renewable, and they're not sustainable. Just call it what it is. How about non-petroleum products? Just say that. It's not renewable. Well, we get to reuse the battery over and over again for a while. Guess what? I get to use my combustion engine over and over again, too, when I fill it up with gas and change the oil. It says, for the average Californian driving a gas-powered car, these costly policies will cost an additional $600 to $1,000 in pre-tax income just to even break even. Gavin Newsom is punishing low and middle income families for driving a gas car. Meanwhile, wealthy elites can easily afford the price increases or can buy an electric car to sidestep Newsom's price gouging. So that's the kind of thing that happens in the energy sector when Democrats are in charge. But let's talk about how this has impacted us in general. So I've got a piece here from a website called Bidenomics.com. By the way, I just wrote a new op-ed. Some of this is included in that op-ed that came out today. 1819 always gets the first run at my written op-eds. They come out every week. They're on Mondays. And so it is up now. Is it already? It's already been published. I know. Mm-hmm. 1819 has.
It's up on
Our website.
It's on your Twitter as well if they want to go check it out.
Absolutely. So some of this information is in there. But how about this? According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, since Joe Biden entered office, energy costs are up 39%. Just since Joe took office, we're paying 39% more overall for our energy. That's, look, folks, that is unconscionable. All right, so home heating oil, luckily we don't do much of that in the South, but still, especially in the North and Northeast, they do a lot of that. Home heating oil is up 44%. Can you imagine living in a climate like Maine or New York State, upstate New York, where they have those epic snows every year, especially the lake-driven snow off of Buffalo? But you got home heating oil costs that are now 44% more expensive. Gasoline up 48%. Electricity up 29%. So if you're like us, natural gas, 27% more expensive. Unlike other goods, it says energy is a necessity for most people. Economists would say it's called an inelastic, which means that when energy prices go up, there won't be a drop-off in demand. People will continue to buy it. They have no choice. If you want to turn the lights on, if you want to run the computer to do your job, if you want to charge your phone because that's connectivity, if you want to cook your food, any number of things, if you just want to heat your house, you're paying more for life. That's where we are. Says the wealthy pay a much larger share of their income on energy than poor people. That's why high energy prices are so insidious, because they really hurt the poor and those on fixed incomes. Yeah, this is what they call a regressive tax. This is a regressive tax, meaning that everybody pays it, but it hits the lower income the hardest because they have no choice but to have it. It's just unbelievable. And this whole article from Bidenomics.com is sickeningly fascinating. I just say that because you're looking at all the things that have happened. Well, what does that do to our overall costs? When energy scales up, guess what it does to everything else? Well, suddenly to run the combines and the tractors and the plows and the harvesters on the row crop farms where we get our food, guess what? Fuel costs go up. Farm to market costs to us go up. Guess what it does to bacon? It goes up. Guess what it does to get toilet paper? It goes up. Guess what it does to get anything for that matter? It goes up. The shipping of goods. If you need something from Amazon shipped to your house, I'll save the money. I won't drive to Target or to Walmart to buy it. Okay, great. You ordered on Amazon. That's fine. Guess what? They have to ship it. Shipping costs just went up because it costs more to ship. The reality is so much of our entire economy is tied to the energy sector. Okay, can we do things like Keystone Pipeline? What? Can we get that back on order? Maybe. How about this? Townhall.com. Dateline today. The Keystone Pipeline is back once Trump retakes office, but there's a problem. Trump has already said he wants to reinstitute it. It was so Barack Obama pretty much tried to kill it. Then, you know, Trump brought it back and started putting it in place. And then Joe Biden killed it again. That's one of the first things he did, by the way. Killed the XL pipeline on first day in office. Just shut it down. Never mind that it had been approved. Never mind that it had gone through all the regulatory burdens and hurdles. Never mind that there was massive amounts of investment in it. That's okay. He's going to kill it. Why? Because the green activists told him to. Well, so this tug of war back and forth. Townhall.com reports that, Trump does want to restart it. However, the company that was building it no longer wants to be a part of it. Why would that be? Well, why would you? You're in the private sector. You owe a duty to your shareholders. You're supposed to make a profit. And you've already invested billions in building something that keeps getting shut down because somebody's got an arbitrary idea and they just shut it down out of a pure agenda-driven spite. What does that do to us? Energy costs go up because we can't transport energy in a more effective manner. Okay, so where are we on all this? I mean, costs are up under Biden. The ability to process and develop new energy is apparently down. But is there a risk of us, like, actually having a problem? I bring you justthenews.com. Dateline, Saturday. You ready? A new report by the North American Electric Reliability Corporation. That's a real organization. The North American Electric Reliability Corporation, which assesses the U.S. and Canada's grid reliability, finds that much of central and eastern U.S. could experience blackouts should we experience a lasting cold snap this winter. Oh, so we talk about baseline load a minute ago. Baseline load is when you have the ability to meet baseline demands. You got to know what your rough baseline load is, and it fluctuates, but baseline load then has spikes. It has peaks, and when you hit peak capacity, you have to increase the ability to produce, or you wind up having rolling blackouts. Electricity supplies are at risk from freezing temperatures that threaten reliable operation of bulk power systems and generators, fuel supply issues for natural gas-fired generation, and wind and solar resource energy limitations, says the report. Okay, blah, 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 blah. What it's basically saying is all these things are at risk because they have been overly green energy developed or shut down. NERC says they've been warning for years that increased reliance on unreliable wind and solar threatens the grid reliability. The areas of greatest risk for blackouts are those where coal and natural fire gas plants have been taken offline. Why have they been taken offline? Well, they're not environmentally sound. Sure, that's all of it. Because everybody knows that scraping the earth for lithium so we can build batteries for EVs using slave labor from a third world country is always better for the economy. Oh, and by the way, better for the environment. Anyway, there's two areas of the nation, especially. 15 states in the Midwest and Great Plains, even down to South Central, which I believe in Oklahoma, are under what's called the MISO, the Mid-Continent Independent System Operators. They are down 5 gigawatts from last year, and they warn that a cold snap could cause a serious problem. Southwest Power Pool, which covers a part of the Great Plains, lost 4 gigawatts of generation capacity. Half of that is because they were forced to do wind and solar increases to their portfolio. And then you got natural gas producers disputing this, saying this is not as bad as they say it is. Well, I got news. It just is. It is because we're looking at green energy farcical regulatory burdens being placed upon our systems. And we all know what our bills are every month, and we all see them going up. Listen, when Charlene and I built our house a few years ago, one of the things that I spent more on was the insulation. We did spray foam insulation in our house. I will never regret it. I am shocked at how well it helps insulate and how much money we have saved in our house because we did this spray foam insulation throughout the entire thing. I cannot imagine what it would have been otherwise. But I still see our prices going up. And it's just the two of us that live there. I still see our prices growing up. What are you doing?
Well, what was it you mentioned to me a while back? This is regarding how much lumber would have costed now if you decided to build your house now instead of then. Like, it's just prices on everything are going up like crazy. And I know Democrats, at least the excuse I see them say is that this is a problem worldwide because of post-COVID and people are trying to keep us out of recession. Like, I'm not really buying that at all. You know, because when you have policies like shutting down the Keystone and doing all of that, it's not just because, oh, golly, the COVID, it's still hurting us. It's not an excuse anymore.
It's not. It's not at all. This has been an agenda-driven. And the only agenda, by the way, the only agenda that should be there is what is best for the American people. And so what they've done is they've put on this whole, we're trying to save you. It costs a little more, but we're going to save you in the long run. We're going to save your lives. No, we're going to save the planet. Okay.
Yeah. And also, I thought this was funny when you were talking about how wind is eco-friendly or whatever. I didn't even realize this until actually Trump on Joe Rogan's podcast is what I learned this from. But if you've ever been at the bottom of a windmill, it is a bird graveyard
down there.
Like,
oh yeah,
it's like it's gross and they're an eyesore and they're unreliable. Like it's, I don't know, the eco-friendly or whatever, unless you hate birds, I guess you can count them out of that. But
listen, I could tell you stories because I fought a wind farm that was going to build right here in the area. And they get a thing like a strobing effect when the sun's behind them, and it causes seizures in cows in the cow fields. You've got the womp womp effect of it that really irritates people. You've got the every once in a while you get a thing called blade throw. Think about that. The blades on those things are bigger than the wingspan of a 747.
Yeah.
And when one breaks loose while it's like a trebuchet, it just launches. It'll go for a quarter mile and then plant itself into somebody's house. And then the other one was ice throw. It's very common. It's very common for these things to develop ice on their blades, and then the ice breaks off. And again, like a trebuchet, it's like pumpkin chunking. You know, it just like slings that ice a quarter mile like a bowling ball, and it's obnoxious.
And they're an eyesore, big time.
And they're an eyesore. And I had more stuff I was going to share, but we're up against a break now. Let's go ahead and take a break. I'll come back and I'll tell you where we're headed with this, because you know what, electricity rates in Alabama are actually pretty good by comparison to most of the nation. You know why? Because we're a friggin' red state, that's why. Because the red state, blue state thing, it's real, y'all. We are a different version of taking care of business as a red state. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, we will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just making common sense like a superpower. All right, so we're going to come up at the top of the hour. After the next break, we'll have Twinkle Cavanaugh. She's the president of the Public Service Commission. They are the body that regulates all of our utility providers here in the state of Alabama. And the interesting dynamic is I get frustrated at my power bill, even though, you know, it's, you know, my house is well insulated and, you know, all that. But what I was surprised to find out, I did a review for today's show because I didn't want to get on here and like say, we're good or we're bad, and they don't have something in my hand. So findenergy.com. Findenergy.com is a resource you can go to that compares states with their energy. The average electricity bill in Alabama is $172 a month. That's the average. The average electricity rate in Alabama is what they call 14.93 cents per kilowatt hour. Okay, just a little factoid for you. That actually puts us as the 30th lowest priced state in the country. Did not know that until today. In fact, I was prepared to be frustrated with this segment, and I got less frustrated when I read that. I'm still frustrated at what they've done to us because it doesn't have to be as bad as it is. But in terms of what it is, at least in Alabama, I will say this, Alabama has the 30th lowest priced rates for electricity in the country by average, 14.93 cents per kilowatt hour. The average state is 16.35 cents per kilowatt hour. The largest supplier, of course, in the state is Alabama Power, TVA being one of the other ones. And then we have a bunch of like rural electric co-ops. But even with all this happening, the Biden-Harris administration, according to the Free Beacon this past weekend, is now rushing to dish out another $25 billion in grants for green energy. Why would they do this? Did you know that we subsidize the so-called green energy sector? The government pays for $129 billion a year in subsidization. That's like grants. That's like tax cuts. That's like making their life easier because they can't do it on their own. Well, the Heritage Foundation came up with a great study recently. It just came out just like a month ago. It says why electricity prices are soaring in blue states. If you geek out on details, this one is there for you. It says many of the states with the most affordable electricity have avoided stringent renewable energy mandates. In other words, it's the states that have the best affordable energy cost prices for the consumer are the ones that are resisting all of these so-called renewables. They're instead relying heavily on traditional energy sources. Go figure. Texas and Ohio both have significant natural gas reserves, but Texas' push towards renewable energy has contributed to its own grid instability, which is crazy to me. It's Texas. Similarly, hydroelectric plays a major role in Washington State, and And yet, Washington State has problems with their rates. Why? Environmentalists get control of the process, and the agenda winds up driving the rates. Of the top 10 most expensive states for electricity, 8 of them are under Democrat control. Go figure. And the two exceptions are Alaska and New Hampshire, which are considered to be geographic anomalies, not because of their politics. Of the top 10 most affordable states, only one of them is considered a progressive state, Washington, and that's because they're also a geographic anomaly. So all I'm saying here is blue state equals green new steel, and your rates go up when liberals get in charge. We're going to talk to Twinkle Cavanaugh from the Public Service Commission here momentarily. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number 3 on a Meatloaf Monday on Thanksgiving week. That's a great lineup. But yeah, we've been walking through the dippers for the day. I did the whole first section on truing up the vote and recognizing why some states take forever to count their votes, and it ain't all good. And then I spent the last little while here talking about what I called keeping the lights on. What does it take to keep the lights on? And oh, by the way, did you know that Alabama fares pretty well by comparison to other states, especially when you consider the red state versus blue state policies and the adoption of the green new steel kind of policies? We're more of an all of the above state. Now, that being said, we're also a regulated state. Alabama's Public Service Commission, people don't often know it's even there, but it is probably one of the most important things in our state government to assist with making sure our bills stay where they need to stay. The commissioner that I'm bringing on right now is Commissioner Twinkle Andrus Cavanaugh. I've known her for over a decade, maybe longer. I mean, she's a wife, she's a mother, she's a small business owner. She's been the former chair of the Republican Party for the state of Alabama. She's been in and around state politics for any number of years. Graduate of Auburn University, lives in the Montgomery area. And she's been on the PSC now for a number of years, and she's on the phone. Twinkle Cavanaugh, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Man, thanks for making time for us today.
Well, happy Thanksgiving. We have got a lot to be blessed, to be thankful for. We are so blessed as a country now that we're going to head in a new direction.
I heard that. You know, and I really hope that, and that's a great segue, thank you, but I really hope that what that means is we're going to see a change in some of the regulatory burdens that our energy sector has been dealing with.
You know, I believe there's going to be a very big change that we're going to see beginning on really day one. You remember the negative changes under President Biden. On day one, he killed the Keystone Pipeline.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see the opposite with President Trump on day one. He's made some great appointments when it comes to an all-of-the-above approach, meaning using all fuels, including, you know, the fossil fuels. But he is saying now that he's got two major priorities, the border, which I'm thrilled about that, but then his other priority that he says will be day one will be energy issues,
yeah.
And that is making us energy independent again. You know, Phil, I'm going to give you a quick example of something that I think is just crazy, but it points out what we've been dealing with over the last 4 years. When it comes to day one with President Biden, he killed the Keystone Pipeline.
Right.
That's 850,000 barrels of oil that would come from Canada down to our Gulf Coast refineries. Well, we still get that oil. It's just that now, instead of a pipeline going one way, you know, south, instead, we either get it on a train or a tanker truck. Usually, it's on a train, but that's 1,125 train cars daily going south.
Wow.
You've got to have all of those going back north to pick up in Canada again. So that's 2,250 train cars daily doing what one pipeline could do at a much less expensive cost to the consumer. So their policies make no sense. They're not green. You know, they talk about green. All they are is pulling green out of everybody's pocket, and that's what they want. They want fossil fuels to be so expensive that their alternative fuels look like they are a good alternative, which monetarily right now they are not.
Oh, and that's okay. All right, this segment's over. I think that's all of it. No, that was perfect. You're so right. Well, I mean, I look at this. I call the Green New Deal the Green New Steal because all it does is take from us. That's all it does.
You know, I read your article this morning, and I thought, how fabulous. I wish I had thought of that language, because that is exactly what it is. It is taking money away from us that should be in our pockets. And one of the things that I talk about when I speak around the state is I ask people, you know, we're all worried about inflation. Inflation today is 21% more than it was 4 years ago.
Right.
You can talk about gasoline. You can talk about electricity. A lot of times we talk about food that's 24% higher. But when you come down to looking at energy, it affects everything. You know, a barrel of oil on President Trump's election day 4 years ago was trading at $42 a barrel.
Oh, wow.
Today, it's at almost $75 a barrel, which is a 78% increase. But at some points over the last 4 years, it's gone as high as $123. That's more than three times the amount that it was under President Trump in the end. And so you look at the price of a barrel of oil and you say, well, how does that affect me? And I'll tell you, if you get up in the morning, and I usually ask people, did you get up this morning and put some contacts in your eyes that are plastic, a byproduct of oil, or put on glasses that are plastic, byproduct of oil? Did you jump in the shower and use soap or shampoos, byproduct of oil? Did you go to the kitchen and turn on anything, your hair dryer, your dishwasher, anything, using electricity? You're using byproducts of oil there. Did you happen to eat a bowl of cereal? The fertilizer for those oats or wheat or whatever it might have been, that's a byproduct of oil. And then, you know, the farmer had to use his tractor. The farmer had to get the cereal to market. All of this is using oil. And so when a barrel of oil goes from $42 to today, it being right at $75 a barrel, then obviously it's going to increase the cost of everything we do in life. And so there's no, you know, there's no rationale for oil being that price. We could be drilling more oil right here. We could loosen the permits here. We could be trading more. We could have our Keystone Pipeline. There are so many things that President Biden did to stop energy flowing, and that's what I love about President Trump, is that he sounds like he is going to get us back energy independent. The oil and the gas will be flowing, and hopefully we can keep more money in our own pockets.
Let me break in and ask you, though.
Okay.
Most people don't recognize what the PSC even is, for that matter, but we are roughly what I would call and all of the above state. I mean, I know for a fact that there's going to be some hydro, some wind, some solar. Really, hydro is not even considered the renewables, but the wind and solar in the portfolios of the various companies that you help regulate at the PSC. But what have you guys been seeing in terms of the policies and the regulatory burdens from DC on our energy providers? What have you been seeing about, you know, the mandates, and how has that changed things? And then what does the PSC do to interact with that kind of stuff?
Well, you know, Phil, for you and your listeners, what I think is the most important takeaway is that if you were to take away all of the mandates that have come from Washington over the last 25 years and take away all of the eco mandates, meaning things they've required of us, and the fact that they've made us turn most of our coal-fired units into natural gas-fired units, then now they've got a war on all fossil fuels. But if you take away all that the state of Alabama spends on meeting these mandates and changing with all of their regulations, we'd probably be paying less money today for our power and our natural gas than we were 25 years ago. But the reality is they have tried their best to, first, there was a war on coal, and then now it's a war on fossil fuels. And so it has made it very difficult. You're constantly jumping through hurdles in everything that we do. But at the Alabama Public Service Commission, we do regulate utilities. We regulate everything from power to gas to wastewater, some water, and we also do real-time insurance for trucking. We do pipeline inspections all across, natural gas pipelines all across the state, and then we also do, did I say real-time insurance for moving companies, 18-wheelers. We regulate Uber and Lyft. But one of the things I think we're most known for would be the regulation of Alabama Power Company. And they do have an all-of-the-above approach, but the thing that's made it the toughest is that natural gas and coal are your baseload electricity production fuels,
right,
meaning you can turn them on whenever you need it and produce a vast amount of electricity for the consumer. The problem with some of these others, now nuclear is fantastic, but I just don't think you can get the permitting that you need to have more nuclear right now. I mean, you might could under Donald Trump, but it takes, you know, anywhere from 10 to 20 years to build a nuclear plant, and you've got to go through the hurdles of every new president. So it's gotten very, very tough to build a nuclear plant. Hydro is fantastic, but there's only so much water you can dam up and have hydro. And solar is just not baseload electricity, meaning you cannot power up the solar between 5 and 6:30 on a freezing cold winter morning in Alabama, and that's when we use the most power in any one moment in the state of Alabama is used on a cold morning between 5 and 6:30 a.m.
Wow.
Excuse me, between 5 and 6:30, not 5:30, 5 and 6:30 a.m. And so it requires a baseload electricity that can always generate the electricity, and that a lot of that is fossil fuels, which the Biden administration, the current administration, has done everything to take the price up that we pay for those fossil fuels and make it more difficult to use those fossil fuels. You know, let me give you one example. Over the last 60 years, coal-fired plants have produced a coal ash, and they are housed in a coal ash pond,
right,
which is just you wet the pond to keep the coal ash in and not up. And so the EPA said under the Obama administration, you have a choice. You can cap it in place to make it safer, or you can haul it to another location. Well, President Biden has come in after Alabama Power Company has started the cap in place process, which takes years, and it also is very, very expensive. And our ADEM in Alabama approved what Obama also approved at the EPA. Then Biden came in and said, nope, nope, you're not going to be able to cap it in place. We're going to ask you to transport it to, you know, basically a dump, you know, a secure place. And so what I'd like to do is give people a picture of what that means.
Okay, that we got about a minute and a half to do that.
Okay, 21 million cubic yards of coal. And so that would mean every 3.5 minutes for the next 33 years, every 3.5 minutes for the next 33 years, a truck would be going from the coal ash pond to take it to another dump site. It makes no sense environmentally. It makes no sense economically. But once again, it's another bad policy that causes problems for us here in America. And that's what I'm so glad to see. We're getting released from out from under that now. And Donald Trump will come in, and hopefully his energy policy will change what we're seeing in Alabama and across our country.
Well, I knew you would have some input. I knew you would.
Oh, yes.
And, I've
become an energy nerd, Phil. I love it, but
well,
I also
rightfully so.
Have been so frustrated.
Well, and the last 4 years, I mean, I can't imagine being on the PSC at a time when it felt like everything about energy production was under attack. But truth be told, we got a great study, and I got to wrap it here, Twinkle, but we got a great study the Heritage Organization just did that shows the difference between what red state policies and blue state policies do to energy production and energy costs for the consumer. But in the meantime, listen, I want to keep you on speed dial because as this thing develops, I may want to get your input again later on as the Trump administration changes the lay of our land, okay?
You call me anytime, and I hope you and your listeners have a very happy Thanksgiving, and our best days are yet to come.
I appreciate that. Thanks. That's Twinkle Cavanaugh.
Thanks, Bill.
Thanks, Twinkle. That's Twinkle Cavanaugh. She is the one of the commissioners, and I believe she's actually the president at the Public Service Commission. She's basically the one overseeing, or one of the ones overseeing, any rate increases, rate decreases, or for that matter, a lot of other things that I didn't even know she did all that stuff. More to come. I'll wrap this thing when we get back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative, just plain right. Just closing out this section on keeping the lights on. I knew that Twinkle Cavanaugh would have some input. I mean, listen, that woman, like, just breathes this stuff every single day. And she's been on the PSC now, I want to say, for like 10 years. But listen, so here's the thing. If you're looking at whether or not, forcing the use of renewables is going to save us money in the long run, let me just refer you to California. I know. It's always California. Why is it always going to be California? Because they are just ate up because jackassery runs rampant in the state capital in California.
They're the state of jackassery.
They are the state of jackassery. They are an epic level of cacistocracy. There is a whole lot of codswallop coming out of that place. It's just unbelievable.
Change the bear on their flag to a donkey. I think that would be pretty fair.
That'll work. So this piece from Heritage that I told you about, the study I told you that compares red states and blue states, it says California has the most exorbitant electricity prices because of, not in spite of, renewables. Says that 30% of installed, that's their grid capacity, 30% of their grid is now solar, and it demands an overabundance of heavily subsidized electricity in the middle of the day. In other words, it drives down the price of electricity for all energy producers a little bit, and then it goes right back up. Says that means that baseload generators must operate at a loss for certain parts of the day, making it increasingly difficult for them to recoup costs. This is why solar keeps getting dumped on the grid during the day. And then, by the way, if you have bad weather, solar can't help you plus back up. Here's the thing. We are right now projected at current rates to subsidize the green energy sector. Subsidize. That means they can't do it on their own. We got to keep them in business with government tax dollars. That means it's like if McDonald's was making burgers, but it wasn't as good as Burger King, so the government gave McDonald's some money to help plus them up so they'd be level with Burger King. That's not the way it's supposed to work. If Chick-fil-A did an experiment in chicken sandwiches and it failed, it would be because the market didn't sustain it. But right now what we're looking at is in the renewable energy sector, the government props them up. So the government is projected right now to spend $1.2 trillion more dollars under current spend over the next 10 years, subsidizing the green energy sector. And by the way, it points out here in this deep dive from the Heritage Foundation, it says renewable energy is a cheap claim, does not account for the costs of what's known as specialized dispatchable power. What is that? That means when they can't sustain the grid during the day because the renewables can't satisfy demand, dispatchable power is when you have to ramp something else up to cover the demand load. Where's that going to be? Coal, nuclear, and natural gas. So all I'm saying here is it works as a piece. It does not work as the push. Do not make it all that they say it is, because it won't be there when you need it. Not yet, anyway. Just cost more. We're coming right back. We're changing gears. Race baiters and charlatans. Oh, you're going to enjoy this one. Just prepare to get mad. Don't swerve while you're driving. We'll be right back.